Blog Talk Radio.
Interesting and exciting show for you. So right off the bat here, we're going to talk a little bit about Bernie Sanders' new climate change plan. He's not playing. He is going all in. In fact, I'm legit scared of snipers on the roof wherever he's giving speeches and wherever he goes, because here's what's for damn sure. The establishment wants nothing to do with Bernie Sanders, which actually explains why the people want a lot to do with Bernie Sanders, because he seems to be the only voice in the race that actually gives a shit about your average guy and gives a shit about, you know, future generations and crazy shit like that. So I'm going to kick it off with that in just a second here. Some other stuff that you have to look forward to. We have Finland is libbing out. They're looking at possibly doing, in fact, they're really close to doing, I should say, basic income for absolutely everybody in the country. I'm going to give you the facts on that, and then I'll give you my breakdown on it. They may have swayed me in favor of it. I've actually, believe it or not, I've never been a basic income guy. I kind of favored what's called the negative tax rate for a long time, which is that, you know, if you're poor, then you get money back from the government, and the rich people do not get money back from the government. But they may have swayed me. We'll dive into that in a little bit as well. We got Ted Cruz hilariously commanding his friends and family during the shooting of his political ad. The CNN somehow got the footage of that, and it is fucking precious. You see exactly the kind of smarmy sleazeball that Ted Cruz is. Later on, Al-Qaeda telling people to take advantage of U.S. gun laws if they are supporters of theirs. We have a trip inside the gay conversion therapy places. That's unbelievable. We have a guy pulled over who decides to do coke right in front of a police officer. That guy's my new hero. We have, I don't know, I could go on and on here. We got obviously sexist pastors who we're going to rip apart, so a million and one things to jump into. Let's kick it off, like I said, with Bernie Sanders and his new climate change plan that he just unveiled. So Bernie Sanders unveiled his climate change plan today, and he's not fucking around. Huffington Post reports, quote, Sanders offers a hard target to reduce carbon pollution, vowing to cut emissions by 40% by 2030 and 80% by 2050. Sanders would repeal fossil fuel industry subsidies, dedicate funding toward a clean energy workforce of 10 million jobs, ban oil, coal, and gas lobbyists from working in the White House, and return billions to the communities hit hardest by the transition to cleaner energy sources and extreme weather tied to climate change. Sanders' plan would outright ban offshore drilling, ban Arctic drilling, block natural gas exports, stop attempts to lift a decades-old ban on crude oil exports, support states trying to ban natural gas and fracking, and ban mountaintop removal coal mining. So, naturally, the response from the right and the response, more specifically from industry on this, is going to be, well, you're just going to absolutely decimate the American economy, and you're going to screw over people in the middle of the country, and this transition is all in the world of theory, you're not being realistic, and yada, yada, yada. The response to that is, what Bernie's calling for is the most aid to those states, the states that are very reliant on dirty energy, fossil fuel and coal and the rest. And he wants to, first and foremost, try to get the most jobs in the new industry, the green technology industry, over there. So that's not a solid, that's not a valid criticism of his plan. And in all seriousness, it's the only one that's even a little bit serious in the sense that, you know, our future generations will not look back at us and go, look at these fucking idiotic apes who fucked it up for all of us. So this is a guy who's saying, well, we have to address this, and we need to stop being ridiculous, and we have to listen to the scientists, and we can't just have business as usual and money run the day. Because if that's the case, people don't realize how we're fucking ourselves in the long run. Humans are incredible like that, man. If you really think about it, there was an article earlier today talking about how in Beijing they have a red alert pollution emergency where they go on to describe that it's basically like you're breathing in a giant cloud of smoke that's engulfed the city. You can't see far in front of you, maybe 100 feet at most, and a lot of people are wearing masks, and the air is just horrendous. And the thing is, right now, so you could go live a day and then just feel like, well, I don't, you know, there are no negative consequences right now. I feel fine. I don't see what the problem is. And because of that, and obviously industry running the show, people act like, I guess we don't really need to move on this because it is what it is. What are you going to do? But then what medical experts are telling us and what scientists are telling us is that's a false sense of security. Give it a little time, all that shit that you breathed into your body is either going to give you cancer, it's going to give you breathing problems, respiratory issues, lung issues, and you don't know. You could be cutting 20 years, 30 years off of your life because it's basically the equivalent of smoking a cigarette all day long when you walk around a heavily polluted area in Beijing. We covered a story not that long ago where kids are now getting lung cancer in some places. So it's a problem, but since not everybody's immediately affected, you know, brush it under the rug, who cares? It's the same thing with climate change, where whether it's Wall Street or whether it's, you know, various corporations or the fossil fuel industry, everybody's getting in on the boom with dirty energy, and they've been in on it for a while now, and they're dragging their feet for green technology, and as a result of that, they don't even realize that they're kneecapping future generations. So here comes a serious political thinker who says, no, all you guys are idiots. Business as usual is ridiculous. We can't keep doing this. We're destroying the planet. Let's fix it. And naturally, what's he going to get? Outright derision from everybody in the conversation. You know, you watch, hear me now, quote me later, I bet you Hillary Clinton comes out and attacks this as unrealistic. I bet you she says, something hurt the economy. I guarantee you she says that. And the reality is that was it the case that the economy was decimated when we had to get rid of the horse and buggy and we then had the car? Was it the case that the economy was decimated when we went from Morse code to better forms of communication? No, sometimes industries come in and then they go out. They rise up, they reign, and then they die. And this is something that Bernie Sanders, he's a social democrat, but he understands that there are some industries that are unsustainable, so we need to fight back against it. And Hillary, who's further right on the spectrum, you know, she should be more on this side because, hey, free enterprise, let the marketplace decide. Well, as of right now, the government is making it so that the fossil fuel industry has an unfair advantage. So you don't want the free market to decide. What you want to do is you want to give an unfair monopoly and you want to give unfair subsidies to the fossil fuel industry and make it so that they can continue to beat back green technology when green technology is not getting nearly the same amount of money in terms of subsidies and they're being stifled by lobbyists in Washington that are trying to make sure that they hold on to power for as long as possible. Well, that's got to come to an end. And the only person with a serious plan to fight back against this is Bernie Sanders. Okay, now, we move on to a really interesting story about a basic income. Finland is considering implementing a basic income policy, which basically means that everybody in the country gets a Social Security check every month their entire life. So Take Part reports on this, quote, every resident would receive a monthly payment equivalent to about $870. The payment would replace all other welfare, Social Security programs, and unemployment payments. The Finnish government plans to begin testing the program in 2017. Some fear the basic income would be unfair, with the wealthy receiving the same amount as the poor. Others worry it might make people less eager to find work. They continue here, but the monthly check is designed to get people back into the workforce. For many Finnish citizens, getting a part-time or low-paying job could impact their welfare benefits, leaving them worse off than if they did not work at all. All right, so this is really, really interesting because they're talking about, at the end there, an incentive problem. So what are you going to do if you make more money when you're not working? And if you go work and take a part-time job or whatever, low-paying job, whatever the case is, you don't make as much as if you were to just sit on your couch and collect money from the government. Now, that's something that it's a rare instance where the right wing is actually right when they call out that problem of the incentive structure. I think their motive is not pure when they call it out. They're trying to demonize poor people and argue against all forms of a social insurance program or safety net program. So they're wrong on the bigger picture, but in the narrow incentive debate, they're not wrong when they say you need to structure it so that people are incentivized to work and that there's a bigger reward for working than sitting on your couch. But the answer is not, hey, keep the wages low and keep the welfare benefits higher than that. The answer is make the wages higher. You can keep the welfare benefits or the safety net benefits as they are, but you should make the payment higher so that when people work, they are getting more out of it than sitting on their couch. So that's my general breakdown in that aspect of this conversation. But in terms of the broader idea, so talking about basic income. Now, I have to admit, for the longest time I wasn't a supporter because of one of the reasons they actually point out here, which is I don't like the idea of like the Walton family getting a check for $870 every month from the government when they're already rich beyond imagination and they don't need it. If anything, the government should tax them much, much more. Don't give them a basic income. That's crazy. So I always thought, and there were some inflation issues that I was worried about, but I always was in favor of something called a negative income tax rate, which means that every modern society has a progressive tax system where the less you make, the lower the taxes you pay, the more you make, the higher taxes you pay. But this would make it so that you add some brackets that are negative. So, let's say you make $20,000 a year, instead of you paying 5% in taxes or whatever the case is, you would actually get back, you fall into the tax bracket of negative 10%, whatever, something like that, and then you get money back. And this makes it so that you don't have the rich people getting that check because they don't need it. They're just taxed higher, and you don't have to give everybody the exact same amount when some people obviously don't need it and some people need it greatly. But when I read this, I started to think over my position. Now, I still like the idea of a negative income tax. Don't get me wrong. I strongly am on that page. But I'm not as against the idea of a basic income as I once was, as long as you do it the right way. So what I mean by that is I wouldn't do it in a way where you just implement it like that, end of conversation. You don't, do other things with the budget in order to make ends meet. I would do it so that, now some countries in Scandinavia, I don't know if Finland is one of them, but they have certain industries that are nationalized. Not every industry is nationalized. There are some things that are private, but some industries are nationalized where they've given themselves enough leeway where they can do this. So let's say in the U.S. we nationalize the oil industry. I know some Republicans just considered suicide with me saying that. But let's say we did that. Well, if you do that and you raise enough money, which of course you would if you nationalize the oil industry, well then, yeah, I'd have no problem with giving people a basic income and calling it a day on that front. And I also would have no problem eliminating some of the social safety net programs if you do that. And you know who did this? There's a state in America that did this. Alaska. You want to know who that was under? Sarah Palin. Now, I'm actually one of the people who, before I heard Sarah Palin talk, I didn't think it was a bad pick for John McCain to say, this is my running mate. But then when you hear her talk, you go, oh, she's an idiot. Bad idea. But in terms of, if you were to look at her record on paper at the time that they chose her, which is probably what his campaign did, I'm sure they spoke to her too, but they didn't get the full picture of just how crazy she is. That was one of the things that she did, which was, I thought, a fantastic idea. It was arguably one of the most socialist things in any state in the United States of America. So I was like, oh, that's a good idea. And is that something that I would support across the U.S.? Yes. So I'm not 100% for a basic income the right way, where you tie it to an industry and you guarantee the cash flow. Well, then sure. And this opens up a bigger conversation about that Stephen Hawking brought up not that long ago, which is moving into a digital future, a future that has incredible technology. I mean, we're already at that point to a certain extent, but technology that's even crazier than it is now. Moving into that future, we have the ability to kind of assign everybody a machine, and then your machine does the work for you, and then you get a check for your machine doing X, Y, and Z. Now, if we don't go down that road, because we are moving towards, you know, the machines taking over, essentially, if we don't go down that road, well, then it's going to be a problem. If we keep this weird capitalist oligarchy-like system happening, you're going to have the captains of industry, the billionaires, the elites, wanting to keep all of the material wealth themselves, and then not even giving crumbs to what they view as the peasants. And then, you know, you're talking about an unstable society. You're talking about revolution perhaps at some point. But we have an opportunity, and Stephen Hawking says, if we do this the right way, where everybody's assigned a machine and it does the work for you and you get the income that way, that would be better, and that would be sustainable. We can have something, not a utopian society, but something close to a utopian society, if we divvy up everything in a rational way, and yes, dirty word, I know, redistribute. Because if you don't redistribute, in reality, you still are redistributing, because the money's just going from the middle class and the poor to the rich. So you're either in favor of that kind of negative redistribution, or you're in favor of some level of intelligent redistribution, where it does go from the rich, the captains of industry, the elites, to everybody in the country. Not saying, hey, make them poor, not saying they're not allowed to be rich. Of course they could still be rich, but within reason, you do redistribution of wealth, and you make it so that in the future we actually have a shot at keeping this whole experiment of humanity together, and we don't revert back to barbarism and savagery. All right, now, let's get into Ted Cruz and his oh-so-sad caught-on-tape coaching of his family and his friends. Video has been released of Ted Cruz coaching his family for his campaign ad. This is behind the scenes here. I'm pretty sure that he did not think anybody was going to see this. Let's watch.
Looks like the perfect presidential ad. American flags. A candidate with a compelling story and a family that looks great in pastels. We're fighting for the world that will be our kids' world. And start looking at me. He had a dream. And he enjoyed the message. Working it in my team. Earlier this year, the Cruz campaign posted hours of this footage on YouTube. By law, campaigns can't coordinate with super PACs, so many quietly post raw videos like this on public websites as a way to share material legally. But it lets us take a rare peek behind the scenes at the strange world of political ad making.
Give me a couple lines from Green Eggs and Ham. That's too personal, Tate. I don't want to tell that.
I do like it. I'll like it in a book. I'll like it in a goat. I'll like it.
Oh, I want to tell that, and you're the best person to tell that.
Well, there's some very personal potatoes that I don't want to go into. I don't like it. I don't like it. I don't like it. I'm Sam. I am. I am. I'm Sam.
You don't have to go into.
When Ted was three.
Look at me.
Well, I need the book if you want to give me a specific line.
Not a day goes by that my mom is not lifting me up in prayer.
That's right.
For hours at a time.
Our family has actually like made a difference and an impact in our country today.
Am I supposed to say like the same time?
My family background is that my grandfather was a missionary in Africa for about 40 years.
I don't know what else to say.
I don't know. Just keep talking. Just keep talking.
Presently, my brother is a missionary in Haiti. Cut, let's start that again. The brother thinks too much. I can't get his gig down. He doesn't live there.
It seems like everything is staged, even hugs.
Hug.
I love you, Joey. I love you.
I love you, too.
I love you, Mom.
I love you, too, dear.
I love you. One more hug and we're out.
In a political commercial, the scene would look something like this, but it takes a lot of time to get that perfect shot.
I'm Ted Cruz, and we approve this message. Okay, a little bit faster, though. That was good. I'm Ted Cruz, and we approve this message. I'm Ted Cruz, and we approve this message. I'm Ted Cruz, and we approve this message. I'm Ted Cruz, and we approve this message.
I think he does almost 20 takes for that last one. Where some of them, he's like, I'm Ted Cruz, and I approve this message. And then sometimes he tries to get his daughters in on it, and he's getting, like, progressively more and more angry. Oh, this isn't working. Oh, it's so gross. There's another part, which you didn't see in there, where they say grace at the dinner table. And it's all so coached. It's just pure bad acting, and Ted's sleazy, slimy politician persona is oozing from every pore of his body. He's like, all right, little ones, which one of you wants to say grace? And one of the little girls like, I do. And they hold hands like, it's so sweet, baby Jesus. like that Will Ferrell movie. And actually, it reminded me of the other Will Ferrell movie that I keep referencing on the show. I think it's called The Campaign, where they run the political ads and, you know, he says his opponent is in Al-Qaeda, and there's one where I think he fucks his wife or something. Like, it was that level of insincere. Everything about it is, even the I love yous made me cringe. It's like, ugh, gross, stop it. It's all an act. He's such a, and you want to know what's crazy? I hesitate to tell this story. I don't know why, though. I'm going to tell this story. I was at this family thing recently, just this past weekend, and I have, you know, family that's not close family. I see them rarely, maybe once or twice a year or something. And one of them came up to me and was talking about politics, and he's like, you know, I just want somebody who's real. So somebody like Ted Cruz, maybe Bernie Sanders. What the fuck? Where did that come from? Yes, Bernie Sanders is real, but Ted Cruz is the opposite. Everything about him is fake. Why are they even trying to continue to put on this charade where it's like you have the filter on the screen, like they said, in certain colors to give you a certain feeling. You're walking and like frolicking on the sidewalk with the dogs and your children. How does anybody fall for that? Anybody, even if you are one of those goofy, I love Leave It to Beaver, old school 1955 right-wing families where, you know, like casually hate the minorities and, oh boy, aren't we a great white family where everything is good all the time. We swear. You even have to look at that and go, come on, man. Come on. Tone it down quite a bit. And there's a deeper story here, which is, and they mentioned it, that this is for his super PAC. So for those of you that don't know the exact way that our campaign finance laws work here, the few remaining ones that we have, if you do spending in a super PAC, that means you're technically an independent outside group that has no coordination whatsoever with the campaign and the candidate, him or herself. So you can spend unlimited amounts of money as long as you're an independent outside group. So what does Ted Cruz do? Records all this stuff, posts it online with no audio. All the weird frolicking and on the sidewalk and saying grace at the dinner table and smiling and hugging his mom. You love me, right, Mom? All that the Super PAC will then pick up. They'll do ads with that footage. And the entire time they can say to the Supreme Court, what? We're not skirting campaign laws. There was a loophole there for a reason. We're not coordinating with them. We're just coordinating with them. It's so gross. And I'll leave you with this because it just shows, I mean, this is Ted Cruz in a nutshell. First was, I guess, his wife, where she's talking about, you know, my brother did missionary work, wherever it was, in Africa, Chile, whatever the fuck she said. And then after a while, she's like, okay, I can't lie as brazenly as my husband does. He doesn't live there. I need to say this. And then Ted at one point, not a day goes by when my mother doesn't lift me up in prayer for hours at a time. Your mother prays for you for hours at a time, every day. That's Ted Cruz in a nutshell. Lies that are so smarmy and so smug and so over the top and outrageous that the Republican base loves him and probably masturbates to him. Okay, break time. When we come back, Hillary Clinton talks about why she refuses to say radical Islam. Then we have an interesting article in Slate pointing out that Al-Qaeda is taking advantage of U.S. gun laws. That's wonderful. And later on, we're going to take a trip inside the ex-gay therapy, so the conversion therapy. Oof, that's a tough story. All right, stay right there, guys. We'll be right back.
Thank you.
All right, we're back, people. And we're going to run the Hillary Clinton story now. If I can shut this fucking thing up, that is. Boom. Hillary Clinton is going to talk about why she refuses to say radical Islam. Let's listen.
You've also been reluctant to say we're fighting radical Islam. I wonder why not. Isn't it a mistake not to say it plain that the violence is being pushed by radical elements in that faith?
Well, that's a different thing. Radical elements who use a dangerous and distorted view of Islam to promote their jihadist ambitions, I'm fine with that. I say it all the time, and I go after Islamists.
So what's the problem with radical Islam?
Well, the problem is that that sounds like we are declaring war against a religion, and that, to me, is number one, wrong.
Even though the qualifier radical is there?
No, because, look, you know enough about religion. You've studied it, and there are radicals, people who believe all kinds of things in every religion in the world. I don't want to do that because, number one, it doesn't do justice to the vast numbers of Muslims in our own country and around the world who are peaceful people. Number two, it helps to create this clash of civilizations that is actually a recruiting tool for ISIS and other radical jihadists who use this as a way of saying, we're in a war against the West. You must join us. If you are a Muslim, you must join us. No. If you're a law-abiding, peace-loving Muslim, you need to be with us against those who are distorting.
Yeah, no, I disagree. So radical is the qualifier, like George Stephanopoulos said right there. If people on the right, and they have, say, let's declare war against Islam, then I say, no, no, now you've gone too far, now you're generalizing, now you have set up the clash of civilizations that Hillary just alluded to right there. But if you say we're against radical Islam, that's different than saying we're against Islam. I don't know how, I don't know why they decided to move the goalpost one step further here and say, no, don't say we're against radical Islam. That's, to me, that's the same thing as saying we're against fundamentalist Islam or extremist Islam, which we are, and we should be. In the same way that a guy like me and virtually every other liberal is against radical Christianity and extremist Christianity and fundamentalist or evangelical Christianity. So let's not keep moving the goalposts here because we're having a semantic argument that's getting ridiculous. I get the overall sentiment that she's getting at, but I think that sentiment is only true if, for example, people say, I'm at war against Muslims. Okay, well, now you're generalizing, and now I'm not okay with that, because the overwhelming majority of Muslims are not going to do jihad. So that I have a problem with, and there I'm going to argue with you. But if you say, I'm against radical Islam, totally, I am too. And if you say, hey, we're involved in a war against radical Islam, even that's fair. Now, I believe in the war of ideas, and I try to fight it on this show all the time. Some people might go further and say we're in a military war against radical Islam. Even that's not wrong, as long as you make clear that that includes us and then everybody else who's fighting against ISIS and the jihadists. So that would include, for example, Shia Muslims. That would include Iran fighting against them. That would include the Shia militias. That would include the Kurds who are Sunnis. That would include all the other moderate Sunnis. And you just have to be clear that when you say, you know, we're fighting a war against radical Islam, that if you mean a physical war, you mean it in that sense. Or if you mean the war of ideas, of course in the war of ideas we're fighting radical Islam. And I even go a step further on that front and say, I am fighting the doctrine of Islam in the realm of ideas, and it's totally fine to say that, because to be against a doctrine is not bigotry in any way, shape, or form. In my opinion, that would be accuracy. I fight against Christian doctrine all the time. Nobody calls me a bigot. They pat me on the back and they say, fantastic job going against Christianity. It's no different from when I go against Islam. It's a different thing completely if people say, I'm going against Muslims, because Muslims are people. They're people just like anybody else. That would be bigoted. If you say, I'm going against Muslims, Yeah, that's a problem. You're not being specifically enough. You're not being specific enough. You are generalizing. But if you say, in the realm of ideas, I'm fighting Islam, the doctrine, rock on, I'm with you. Or if you say I'm fighting radical Islam, rock on, I'm with you. And I don't like the fact that the Democrats are moving the goalposts more and more. Now, again, I get it. She is genuinely concerned about this clash of civilizations thing and lumping in too much. But if people say radical Islam, I don't think you're lumping in too much. Lumping in would say I'm involved in a war against Muslims, or I am against Muslims. That is generalizing. That is bigoted. It's not bigoted to say against Islam or radical Islam. And one more thing I want to point out here, which is that there's a giant chunk of liberals now, this significant percentage among liberals and progressives, that like to use this argument that, well, whenever anybody does violence in the name of Islam, they've, quote, distorted it. So what does that mean? That means that, in their mind, true Islam is, by definition, peaceful. That's not true. That's a rosy way of looking at the world, which is not at all based on the facts. The reality is, everybody's distorting across the board. So if you're a peaceful Muslim, you know what you're doing? You're distorting by ignoring all of the bad parts of the Quran, and there are many. There are many violent parts in there. So you're distorting. The fundamentalists are also distorting, and they're blowing off the passages that are, you know, better and lovely, like no compulsion in religion, for example, is one of them. Well, it looks like ISIS cares about compulsion in religion and forcing people to join their religion. There's the Quran says you can't get intoxicated because that's from Satan. And what have the ISIS fighters been doing? Almost all of them have been taking amphetamine pills, Captagon pills. So they're violating the Quran in that sense. They're violating the Quran in 100 other ways as well. So what I'm trying to get people to understand is you can't just say that the bad people are distorting the faith. No, because the faith can justify really shitty things and really good things. So by definition, everybody's a cherry picker. It's the same thing with Christianity. Is it a fair thing to say, well, Pat Robertson is distorting the Bible when he says that gays are, you know, that we should be against gays? I mean, he's not. He's distorting it in other ways when he's not for economic liberalism, for example. But on that particular point, he's not really distorting it. So in different ways, the good people and the bad people are distorting the book. Martin Luther King was abiding by certain parts of Scripture in the Bible and not others. So in some ways he was distorting, in some ways he wasn't. Pat Robertson in some ways is distorting. He's not really distorting when he says we should be fucked up to gays. Jihadists, you know, are they distorting when they say that women get less of an inheritance than men? No, they're not. Are they distorting, so, like in the Hadith, for example, where they say throw gays off a roof and kill them, are they distorting Scripture in that way? In that way, they're not. In other ways, they are. But bottom line is, you can't just say the good people are the only ones that count and everybody else is distorting, because that's not true. Then you're saying, by definition, all religion, Christianity, Islam, and others, they are peaceful. They're not all peaceful. That's a blind thing to say and believe. And the reality is, every interpretation of Scripture, by definition, is correct. So you're blinding yourself to the problem if you don't acknowledge that. Okay, next. Now we go to Al-Qaeda. Slate has a really interesting article pointing out the fact that Al-Qaeda has instructed fellow jihadists to take advantage of U.S. gun laws. They say, quote, Adam Gadan, the American militant who became a senior advisor to Osama bin Laden and was one of Al-Qaeda's leading propagandists before he was killed in a drone strike in Pakistan earlier this year, put out this video in 2011.
Muslims in the West have to remember that they are perfectly placed to play an important and decisive part in the jihad against the Zionists and Crusaders, and to do major damage to the enemies of Islam, waging war on their religion, sacred places, and things, and brethren. This is a golden opportunity and a blessing from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And the way to show one's appreciation and thanks for this blessing is to rush to discharge one's duty to his ummah and fight on its behalf with everything at his disposal. And in the West, you've got a lot at your disposal. Let's take America as an example. America is absolutely awash with easily obtainable firearms. You can go down to a gun show at the local convention center and come away with a fully automatic assault rifle without a background check and most likely without having to show an identification card. So what are you waiting for?
This is a tough one, man. I'm not sure. Should we try to do something to stop this? That's really what the conversation we're having in the U.S., though. The amazing thing is we can stop this or put a system in place which attempts to stop this without violating anybody's rights at all, and the gun manufacturers and the leadership of the NRA and the Republican politicians say, nope, 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 nope. It might cut a little bit into profits. So shut it down. No attempt at any reform, even reform that stops this. And what's crazy is, actually it's not crazy, it makes perfect sense, 90% of the American people are in favor of universal background checks for gun purchases, no exceptions. Even a majority of NRA members are on that side. We have a story coming up on that in just a little bit. So the real problem here isn't even the NRA members. The problem is the leadership of the NRA, the gun manufacturers, and the Republican politicians who care more about profits than basic sanity. I mean, this is the position these guys are taking. They can look at that and go, best to do nothing, isn't it? No, it's not. No, it's not. And again, if you're saying, oh, Second Amendment, we're in a position where we can't do anything about that. In the Second Amendment, it says, a well-regulated militia necessary to the security of a free state, right of the people to keep and bear arms, shall not be infringed. The very first part, a well-regulated militia. The word regulated is right in there. So they're talking about a militia, but it's also regulated is right in there. And the argument the right makes is, we can't even regulate it. I thought you were a literalist. I thought you looked at the Constitution and you go, every word's perfect. Every word's good, man. Can't argue against it. Well, okay, you can't argue against it. It says regulated. All we're asking is for regulation to keep guns out of the hands of fucking Al-Qaeda. And you're like, no, he's coming for my rights. My right to be killed by an Al-Qaeda guy who got a gun legally in the United States of America. We're arguing with mentally deficient people.
Okay, next.
Same issue here. I just mentioned it. I want to revisit a John Hopkins survey from 2013 published in the New England Journal of Medicine to remind you guys how politics in America functions. So when it comes to gun reform, here's what they found. Quote, 75% of those identified as NRA members support universal background checks for gun sales. In addition to favoring universal background checks, the majority of NRA members surveyed supported prohibiting people with recent alcohol or drug charges to purchase guns, and 70% supported a mandatory minimum of 2 years in prison for selling guns to persons who are not legally allowed to have one. So, how can that possibly be? If everyone in the country, from liberals to conservatives to NRA members, agrees with this, why no policy changes? In a democracy, it's the most obvious move to do in terms of legislation. Just do a universal background check. That's it. Basic, mild, vanilla reform. Well, like I just referenced in our previous segment here, the leadership of the NRA takes money from the gun companies, so the manufacturers, the people who make money from selling the guns, and they buy politicians to do the bidding of the gun manufacturers, the gun companies. So there's this gross, corrupt bribery that goes on where the people who make all their money from selling guns give money to the leadership of the NRA. The leadership of the NRA gives it to the politicians with a silent understanding. I'm giving you this money for your campaign so that when you win, I scratch your back, you scratch mine. Now, what do I need you to do in response? Very simple. Just kill any gun reform that comes up. Any gun reform. Doesn't matter how sane, straightforward, and obvious it is. Hey, should we stop terrorists from getting guns? Nope. Hey, how about, you know, people with former criminal records have 3 felonies? Nope. Hey, how about paranoid schizophrenics who have a history of being violent? Nope. Nothing. No background checks, no ban on high-capacity magazines, no process set up by which you can get a permit for certain kinds of weapons that really shouldn't be out there, like certain kinds of assault weapons. Nope, nothing. Nothing. So again, in this case, the problem isn't the liberals, clearly. The problem isn't the conservatives. The problem isn't even the membership of the NRA. They're with us. They're with us on this. The problem is the corruption and the bribery and the money in politics and the fact that the one group of people who make their money from selling guns no matter what, the one group of people that has the biggest conflict of interest when it comes to gun policy, they're the people making the policy. Damn everybody else. Damn all of the dead innocent civilians. Damn common sense. Damn everything. They got to make an extra nickel, so buy the system and make a democracy openly an oligarchy. That's the place we're at today. Okay. Now, let me do one more here, and then we'll take a break, and then I'll come back with an awesome final 30 minutes for you. Gay conversion therapy and what's going on that front. Vice took a trip inside of a gay conversion therapy camp recently, so let's take a look at this and then we'll discuss.
Story of Jeff.
We use a fairy tale, a myth, the Jack and the Beanstalk story, as a kind of a metaphor for every boy's growth into manhood.
Oh, I'll give you
these. We borrowed some of the interpretation of it from Michael Gurion's book, The Wonder of Boys, as he talks about and uses it as a model of how this boy, Jack, is estranged from his mother a little bit as he grows off and experiences his masculinity.
Look at it! A phallus symbol! So the beanstalk is a big penis? Running from the shadow. Imagining pushing through the wall, through your wall.
So I did my first Journey into Manhood weekend back in 2007. It's probably the most impactful weekend I've ever went on in my entire life. I was never what our society calls gay or homosexual or whatever label we put on it. I am simply a man. If anything, I would always consider myself a heterosexual man, which just with a lot of issues.
Let's start with Jetty, since he knows this process. So, you guys watch Jetty as he models this.
You want me to do it like I'm
going to
do it?
Uh-huh. Yeah. I feel anger! And I feel this emptiness inside me every time I look into the mirror. The impulse I want to do is just punch that mirror because I can see my fucking parents in the background just staring at me and doing nothing as I've gone through this my entire fucking life. And I want to scream, what the fuck is your problem? Where were you? Why did you leave me here?
Vice did a great, I think it's three parts or maybe four parts on this. Definitely check that out if you haven't yet. This is just a little snippet of it. And actually, these people are the counselors. These aren't even like the students, the people that go there to try to learn not to be gay. That's disturbing to watch, man. I feel for them. I do. I feel bad for them. I mean, you get this sense when you listen to them that they feel like they're defective. Something's wrong with them. And this guy who was just screaming there goes on to explain, like, at, you know, some point along the way, what we're trying to do is go back and recapture our masculinity and see where we lost it and basically correct the problem that led us to be gay in the first place. And I think this is tremendously dangerous because their entire premise, their narrative, is wrong. Because their narrative presupposes that something's wrong with you if you're gay. And very simply put, nothing's wrong with you. It's just different from being heterosexual. Who cares? And if anything, we're, you know, having an overpopulation issue in the world, might be something a little bit better about being gay in the sense that, you know, you're not an indiscriminate breeder, as many people are, to put it in crude terms. I'm, of course, going too far here. Of course, there's nothing wrong with heterosexual people either. But the bottom line is, it's unmerited, and it's incorrect to say, something's got to be wrong with me, I'm attracted to the same sex. Bullshit! And the problem is exactly what you're looking at here. The problem is society and religious dogmatism. And this comes from Christianity, this comes from Islam, this comes from a variety of different faiths where they shame you. And they say, no, it's wrong, it's immoral, it's sin, you can't do it, you know, something's wrong with you, gotta change it. And that narrative has been so pervasive for so long throughout human history that they internalize it. And, you know, they think that something's wrong with me, it's not my parents who are fucked up to me because they believe in mythical fairy tale bullshit. You know, it's not the society and the far right wing that's hoisting their ridiculous morality on me. No, something's got to be wrong with me, and I got to conform to their ideas and their beliefs. That's not true, guys. You know, and the point where the guy says, I was never gay. I was just a man with issues. And people wonder why. Like, they'll point to, and this is hilarious, people will point to, look, higher suicide rate for gay people or transgender people, you know, gay people smoke at higher rates than heterosexual people. See, these are all problems associated with being gay. What's the reality of that claim? No, you have it exactly backwards. Perhaps they have these higher levels of social ills because your punk ass and mainstream society in some places doesn't accept them. Maybe that's the problem. Maybe the problem is every day of their life, from when they were kids, they were told, something's wrong with you, something's wrong with you, something's wrong with you, something's wrong with you. And then it turns out, you know, you find some refuge in smoking cigarettes, doing drugs, having a lot of indiscriminate sex with other gay people. And, you know, at the end of the day, finger pointed at them still, your problem. Maybe you've set up a society which has created the problem and exacerbated the problem, and the social ills will reverse if you stop being vicious douchebags. It's hard to watch, man. And believe it or not, this is one of those camps that's more benign. Because other camps, we've covered the story on this show. It's just flat-out exploitation and sexual harassment in many respects. You have the counselors who are also gay, who pretend like they're cured now, and they have the students come sit on their lap and they rock with them and they say, you know, oh, don't think about sexual things. This is a test. And they make them run around naked and shit. I'm not kidding. There's a big court case over this. I think it was in New Jersey. We covered it on the show. This isn't real. This isn't real therapy. This isn't actually medicine that you're looking at here. This is a grotesque, perverted system of shaming backed up by credibly arbitrary morals and a moral system and a framework that originated with the dogmatism of religion. And it has to stop. Okay. Let me take a break. When we come back, got awesome stories to finish up for you guys, including one of my favorite is the man whose balls were so big that he perhaps did coke in front of a police officer. My new hero. All right, stay right there, guys. All right, we're back, guys. We are back. Waka waka. All right, shut that off. Come on, man. Let's go after this. Oh, wait. Did I actually skip over the story? No, I didn't. Never mind. All right, we're going to go after a Baptist pastor now. Fun. Baptist pastor Ashley Ray did a sermon on gender roles on Sunday. Oh boy, let's listen.
There is a divine hierarchy in marriage. Look at Ephesians 5:22. Wives, submit to your own husbands as to the Lord. For the husband is head of the wife, as also Christ is head of the church, and he is the Savior of the body. Therefore, just as the church is subject to Christ, so let the wives be to their own husbands in some things. Is that what it says? In everything. Lord, give us grace and give us ears to hear this morning. In Christ's name, we pray. 1 Timothy chapter 2, verses 12 through 15. I'm going to just flip over there and read that for you. The Bible says, I do not permit a woman to teach or to have authority over a man, but to be in silence. You say, well, that doesn't really mean that. Well, let's see if it was cultural. For Adam was formed first, then Eve. See, some people say, oh, well, now that we're Christians, we're all elevated to the same level. Well, that's true. We're all to be submissive to Christ, and we're all to be submissive to one another. But you see, Adam's headship was not a result of the fall. It was before the fall. And then Paul said that the woman was deceived. That's not putting the woman down, but that's saying that the man was to lead. When the lady led, the human race fell. There is, whether you like it or not, a divine hierarchy in marriage. But watch this. There should be a divine harmony in marriage. But wives must submit to their husbands. That will bring harmony. Pastor, what's the word submit really mean in the Greek language? To live up under? To submit?
Now, come on, I ask y'all, what's the word submit mean in Greek? It means live up under? It means submit? Oh, really? Thank you, Aristotle. The word submit means submit. He done got him. Pastor Ashley done got him again. Oh, that's so intellectually embarrassing watching all of this here. I mean, so let's go through some of his arguments. And there's something important to take away from this, which is that some of it was his own ridiculous, you know, off-the-cuff remarks, but the bulk of what he was saying was what? Directly from the Bible. He was reading from the Bible. Now, this is an inconvenient fact for all religious people, the fundamentalists and the moderates, that unfortunately there's crazy shit in all your fucking holy books, so you could have people reading directly from the book, and then, you know, a lot of liberals, moderate religious liberal people, would say, you're acting unbiblical, or you're acting, un-Islamic, they'll say to Islamic scholars who are sexist. And these guys respond like, I was reading from the Bible. I was just reading from the Quran. Or I was reading from the Hadith. What? Am I really the one that's acting against my religion? You're acting against your religion. And that's why I'm a non-believer. Well, I'm a non-believer for a trillion reasons, but one of the reasons is I don't want to be involved in that cherry-picking contest because I think it's a ridiculous, futile exercise. I think the accurate response is, no, you're all wrong, and you're all trying to base your morality and your life off of nonsensical desert books, which are intellectually embarrassing, and an eighth grader today could write a better moral code. So how do you like them apples? So he's reading from the Bible. He says, women, submit to your husband in everything. Women can't have authority over men. So what are the implications of this? If we were to be literal about these passages, well, women can't have authority over men. No more female teachers. None. No more female teachers in any positions of authority. Women, submit to men in everything. Wives, submit to your husband in everything. What are the negative implications of that? Do I even need to spell it out for you? Women, wives, submit to your husband in everything. Is that a society you want to live in? That's not a society I want to fucking live in. Well, this is one of the things that the Bible preaches. And guys, put this in perspective. The true sexists, what do they want? They want defined roles for the opposite gender. So, you know, saying that women, by definition, need to be in the kitchen and need to take care of their man, and that's the end of the conversation, and I don't even want them to have the option of going out to the workplace. Well, that is clearly a sexist. Now, it's not, I mean, look, there are people who, like myself, for example, I just want to give the woman the choice. Okay, and it's as simple as that. So let's say we live in a society where 60% of women still say, no, I want to raise my kids, and I want to go about the traditional so-called roles. Okay, I'm not going to judge you. That's perfectly fine. I got nothing against you. I'm not saying you're a failure as a woman or like some radical feminist might say. But true sexism is this. I defined a role for you, and you can't leave that role because I say so. And again, this is the Christian fundamentalism and extremism. Muslims, don't get too comfortable pointing the finger at the Christians here, because let's remember, as we covered on the show recently, in Islam, women get much less inheritance than men do. I would say that's absolutely fucked up and ridiculous. Some interpretations of some parts say women need to cover up. Now, there have been the moderates find, you know, support in the scripture to wiggle out of that, which is good. But again, the problem is that we're basing our stuff on these books anyway. But then there's another part where we covered on the show, I was giving you the direct quotes, where it says women are, quote, mentally deficient. I think that one's in the Hadith, if I'm not mistaken, where Muhammad says that. Women are mentally deficient. And let's add the cherry on top here to, you know, expose the profound irrationality of what this guy's saying and these beliefs. He said, I think referring to a biblical story, when women lead, the human race fails. That's what he said. Think about how adorable that is. Because what's the implication there? The implication is like, come on, can't let these wacky women take over. There might be like all kinds of problems. Whereas now, under men, nailed it. Dude, are you serious? Look around. Pretty sure the Nazis, you know, the Nazi leaders, all men. And again, I'm not making the argument that, you know, hey, men are inferior and they're bad and they're worse. I'm not saying that at all. What I am saying is his claim of when the women lead, the human race fails is obviously absurd, because men, in many respects, have done an absolutely pathetic, a shitty job. We have jihadists that exist. We had the KKK. We have the U.S. government nuked civilians in Japan. We've been warlike to no end. The overwhelming majority of governments are unstable. You know, dictators all over the place and theocracies all over the place. And this guy's like, you know, can't let those women take over. Then things might not be good anymore. Next. Raw Story is reporting that an Ohio man named Jason Dixon is under pressure from Christians because he put up a zombie nativity scene. Quote, for the second year in a row, Jason Dixon, who manages a haunted house, set up a manger featuring the undead honoring a zombie baby Jesus, despite being ordered to take it down last year. So the town said that he needed a permit. He applied for the permit, and then they rejected him. I love that move. Nope, you can't put this up. You need a permit. He's like, great, where do I apply? He goes through the steps. They're like, nope, we're rejecting it. What the fuck? Why didn't you just kneecap him to begin with? So now he can be fined $500 a day. And now they say that his request was denied because it takes up more than 35% of his front lawn. That's what they claim. So they say, no, this isn't about the fact that we're offended by it. It's that, you know, it takes up too much of your lawn. But there's another rule that says as long as it's under 200 square feet, it should be okay, and it's only 65 square feet. So it appears like the real issue here is, quote, Christian protesters handed out pamphlets Sunday in front of his display reading, God frowns upon this manger display, accompanied by biblical verses. come on, guys. This is embarrassing. Really? We're supposed to be a civilized nation. We're supposed to not be a theocracy who gets our feelings hurt over every little fucking, you know, besmirching of the great religion. But that's exactly what's happening here. This reminds me of the case from, I think, last year where this teenager took a picture with, like, a Jesus statue, pretending to blow it or pretending that it blew him or something, and put it on social media, and then he was arrested. Now, obviously, you know, he couldn't be kept in jail because that's not against the law. Totally freedom of speech, you know, or freedom of expression. Nothing wrong with that whatsoever. But they arrested him, and then they released him. I mean, just the fact that he had to go through that day where he was brought in for that, are you fucking stupid? I mean, this is ridiculous, man. This is you don't want to go down this road. What's at the end of this road is a Christian version of Saudi Arabia. Just you don't like, let's face it, you don't like the zombie fucking manger. So, you know, you're saying, we're not going to allow it because we don't like it. Well, fuck you. How about that? What if I, as a non-believer, said, you know what, fuck all your Christmas lights, fuck all your Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, fuck all your Santa Clauses, I see it every fucking 8 steps whenever I go out in the wintertime, fuck your little nativity scenes with Jesus and the fucking made-up fairy tale story that you believe because you're a dunce, fuck all that, get rid of all that because I say so, because I'm in control of the government and I don't like it. What would the response be then? Anti-Christian bigotry, unfair repression of freedom of speech and expression. But when is this guy who's put up the zombie Jesus? I'm offended. Take it down. I don't give a shit if you're offended. Should I be more clear about that? Fuck your feelings. In a free society, I don't have to care about your feelings. You don't have to care about mine either. In reality, what am I in favor of? I'm in favor of you doing whatever the fuck you want to do with your property. You want to paint your house rainbow colors? By all means, be my guest. You know, you want to put up a giant statue on your front lawn of biblical verses? I don't care. It's your property. I have no say in the matter. Do whatever the fuck you want. This is what actual freedom is. So all I'm asking for is the same respect that everybody else gets. Where, you know, hey, you're a religious person, you get to put on wherever you want on your private property or whatever holiday lights, this and that. Why should it not be the same for non-religious people? And by the way, there's not even any evidence that this guy is non-religious. He just happened to run a haunted house, and he's had the fucking zombie baby Jesus manger left, and he's like, oh, I'll put it up for Christmas. So it's nonsense, it's bullshit, and yes, we still try to suppress people who don't agree with the mainstream argument, which is supposed to be counter to a free democracy. Okay. Next. I didn't realize how many religion stories I had today. A Sri Lankan maid who lives and works in Saudi Arabia is facing the death penalty for the horrific, horrific crime of adultery. She's 45 years old. She's married. She had an affair with another Sri Lankan man who apparently lives in Saudi as well. Now, he is getting lashes. He's getting 100 lashes. She, again, the death penalty. Now, how do they do their tap dance and get around this one? Well, no, the thing is, he was single. So, yeah, it's not right what he did, but we're not going to kill him. In reality, this is more tied to the sexism of fundamentalist Islam, where, yes, it is true, regardless of what people want to believe, that women inherit less than men do. Some verses, they say, you got to cover up your whole body. In Salafi Islam, they absolutely have to do that. According to some hadith, women are mentally deficient. So this is, you know, the casual sexism, among other things, killing somebody who does adultery, because that's a genius idea. But, you know, the casual sexism, you had sex, guy, girl, kill the woman, give him a couple lashes and wink as you do it. Ah, way to go, huh, big guy? It's beyond grotesque. So, of course, let's not forget that Saudi Arabia is the current chair of the United Nations Human Rights Council panel. God, that you have no idea how much that gets under my skin. The government, that is, not my words, but the words of a recent article that came out. I think it was in the New York Times. Saudi Arabia is an ISIS that made it. But what do they get? Because they have their friends with the U.S. and they're our oil butt buddy and we have business relationships with them. What do they get? They get to be on the United Nations Human Rights Council. They are the chair of the United Nations Human Rights Council. I mean, if anybody ever thought for a second that business as usual doesn't rule world politics, you are immensely naive. It's all about, I was going to say the Benjamins, but it sounded too gimmicky. It's all about the money. It is clearly all about the money. It's all about the corrupt system. And this is a country that has executed over 150 people this year for charges like, by the way, mostly beheadings, not just killing, beheading. Because, you know, morality. And they beheaded them for drug smuggling, witchcraft, sorcery, apostasy, and many other non-crimes. One of my favorite facts about Saudi Arabia is that atheists are defined as terrorists. Stay classy, guys. I didn't know that I was a terrorist. I didn't know that by swearing off all violence, except in cases of self-defense, that makes me a terrorist. See, in my mind, that would make me the opposite of a terrorist. But this is classic religious fundamentalist garbage, where, you know, it's effectively, it's projection, like the atheist thing. Oh my God, they're so irrational for not believing in our space wizard that dictates our lives in every way, shape, and form. Aren't they so bad? Aren't they so aggressive? They're like terrorists. Anyway, when do we go behead like 27 more people? Tell me again who's immoral. Tell me again who's aggressive. Tell me again who are terrorists. And they said they're going to sue people recently if on social media you compare them to ISIS. Because, you know, that's the way a normal person would react if the comparisons are not true. Thou dost protest too much, my son. You know, it's like the gay Republicans who, I'm not gay. I don't like dick. I'm not attracted to men. I don't think about it at all. Let's talk about it all the time, nonstop. But not because I'm thinking about it or because I am gay, but because I'm so against it. That's why we're talking about it all the time. You're comparing me to ISIS? I'm not like ISIS at all. I swear. If you say I'm like ISIS, I'm going to sue you. Let's behead people for sorcery again, please. You guys are a joke. You're a pathetic joke. What you believe is not true. What you believe is not accurate. It's always the people who are most convinced that they are the most moral that are the most immoral. I mean, you didn't think Hitler woke up in the morning and looked in the mirror and was like, yeah, I'm doing the right thing. Kill the Jews, buddy. Am I right? Huh? Because Hitler, he had a narrative of oppression, too. Hey, the Versailles Treaty fucked over the Germanic people, the Aryan people. We had a debt that we couldn't pay back. We should have won the war in the first place. The international community is crushing the good people of Germany under their boot. We're so oppressed. We're so oppressed. We're so oppressed. As they're shoving Jews into the gas chambers, we're so oppressed. Get in the gas chamber. We're so oppressed. We're so oppressed. Same thing here, right? Islam's under attack. Oh, my God, it's under attack. Don't be bigoted. Don't be intolerant. Anyway, can we call more atheist terrorists, behead people for sorcery and witchcraft, and kill people for adultery? Utter horseshit. You are the problem. You are the bigoted ones. You are the intolerant ones. You are the people who are acting in a primitive, barbaric, savage way. And thankfully, you have the support of our wonderfully moral government that cares about human rights and freedom and democracy. Except when we don't. All right, let me get two more in real quick. I think I have time. My favorite story of the day. You ready for it? Let's do it. Last week, Seattle police pulled over 73-year-old Nick Abst Olson, and then this epic exchange happened.
What's in your left hand? Nothing. Show me your left hand. What is that? Are you kidding? You're about to snort coke on the side of the road?
No. Really?
Really.
What was it?
Nothing.
I'm watching you do it.
There's nothing.
Nothing.
You got some vitamin pills that I take?
That's not a vitamin.
I know.
Why, what would possess you to do that on a traffic stop with a police officer right behind you? I just don't understand.
I don't understand either.
You understand that? I've never had a traffic ticket.
I just saw that. I was going to come up and give you a warning.
Oh, this is my favorite story ever. I like just the way he says it's nothing. Totally guilty. But this? Nothing! It's nothing! I'm usually the person that's always like, everybody, calm down, shut the fuck up, wait for the evidence, let's not jump to conclusions here. Now this time I'm jumping to conclusions. Is this? Nothing! Nothing! Whenever people have the voice gets like high-pitched immediately, and it's super defensive, but like as it's defensive, it's trying to like de-escalate the situation, even though it's doing the opposite. That there's something distinct about that tone where it's like, why are you lying? Like that awesome meme that's been going around for a while now. And then his excuse is fantastic. This vitamin pills. It's vitamin pills. And then the officer goes, that's not vitamin pills. And he goes, I know. Which is it? Which is it? This is vitamin pills. That's not vitamin pills. I know. What the fuck? What the fuck? Cocaine is not a hallucinogenic. So even though he probably already did it, why is he hallucinating? Like, vitamin pills. No, did I say vitamin pills? I mean, no. You're with it enough when you do cocaine to be like, no, this isn't vitamin pills. If you're actually on cocaine, usually what you do is say, no, this isn't vitamin pills, but let me go on to tell you about how I have ambitions of starting a vitamin pill company. Me and my friend Craig are filing to be an LLC because cocaine makes you very hyperactive and sharp and ready to take on the world, which actually leads to my controversial final point here. Totally let him go. I have so many reasons for this, but let me start here. Number one, he's old. Now, that's not really a reason, but it kind of is a reason, because, like, you're really going to lock this guy up. He's 73 years old. You know, hey, end of your life. How dare you do a substance? Lock you up! So just give him a pass for that, but that's not the strongest argument here. The strongest argument here is not all drugs are the same, guys. So it's not like he fucking did some sort of insane hallucinogenic that makes it so that, you know, you're seeing all types of geometric patterns and you lose all mobile ability and all that stuff. It's not like he took a super downer where it's like a horse tranquilizer and he can't move or see straight, so it's dangerous when he's on the road. Cocaine, like I just said, is a drug that's an upper. It makes you sharp. It makes you with it. They give amphetamine to a variety of different people in military positions all around the world so that they can focus and stay sharp and go without sleep and be on point. And, like, for example, fighter pilots continue to fly and be with it the entire time. So if you're driving a car, the same logic applies. You're doing a drug that is an upper that makes you more sharp, that makes you with it. And then they're going to say, oh, we got to lock you up. We got to put you in a cage because you took something that's going to make you drive better. This is the kind of stupid, dogmatic, you know, anti-drug thinking, which is the entire problem behind the drug war. Everybody has they wall off a part of their mind mentally where they just say, drugs bad, end of conversation. So you see something like this and your average person's like, yeah, well, you shouldn't have been doing cocaine on the road. No, fuck you. Don't judge. It's a drug that's going to make him drive better. He's 73 years old. He's just trying to have a good time. Let him live. All right, next. Final story of the day. A 23-year-old art student from Iceland named Almer Atlason live streamed his idea of an art project. So what he did for the art project is a little weird. And what ended up happening? He was in a box, and he was staying there for a while, and he was live streaming, so he jerked off. Now, why did he do that? Because he's a 23-year-old dude. What other reason do you need? Now, I'm going to be an asshole here. I was going to say I'm going to be a dick here, but that's perhaps the wrong word to use in the middle of this story. This isn't art. And I'm kind of pissed off and annoyed at the modern art crowd. And come on, guys. Keep it real. It's basically 100% super liberal people who are in the modern art crowd. Those are not my kind of liberals. The liberals who look at the blank canvas and they're like, oh, this is such a deep piece of art that talks about the vacuous nature of human beings and what we are truly inside is a mold of clay with a blank slate, and then society teaches you all these wrong things about how to act, and that's why the blank slate is really a beautiful piece of art that's like the Sistine Chapel. Whenever I think of modern art, I think of that South Park episode where they move to San Francisco and they become super libs and they fart into like cups and then they sniff it. They're like, because liberals are concerned about smog, but in the episode, they release smug, and the smug is that. They fart in cups, and they're like they love the smell of their own gas. They're that smug. That's what I think of when I think of modern art. The definition of art is this, quote, the expression or application of human creative skill and imagination, typically in a visual form, such as painting or sculpture, producing works to be appreciated primarily for their beauty or emotional power. All right, this isn't that, man. This isn't that. It's a dude living in a box. I think he was there for a week, and he jacked off. I don't even want to ask questions about how he went to the bathroom or why he thought, you know, this was a good idea to begin with. I'm sorry, but I cannot, in good conscience, lump this in with, you know, wonderful oil paintings from 1584, where people spent over a few years on it and got every detail exactly right. I mean, you're welcome to call it art if you want, but I think that's weird, and I think you're reading too deep into shit that is not at all deep, and people want to get the accolades and people loving them without actually putting in hard work to do something that's impressive. So what do? You sit in an open box, you jack off, and then you say, oh, I am a brilliant artist. My piece is right up there with the can of Campbell's tomato soup and the blank slate. Now worship me. This is all narcissism, to steal a phrase from Bill Maher, narcissism masquerading as humility. Oh, I'm just a guy doing an art project here, and isn't it brilliant? Look at me, look at me. All right, I'm out of time, guys. I love you to death. I'll see you tomorrow. Everybody have a great night. Peace.